This week on Barbell Shrug, we give you 3 quick tips on how to gain more muscle.
Yo, this is CTP, and you're listening to the Barbell Shrug Podcast, the number one strength and conditioning podcast for CrossFitters.
If you want to check out the video version, which you should, go to fitter.tv and watch that, because it's way cooler than just listening.
And how do you spell fitter.tv there, Mr. Bledsoe?
F-I-T-R.tv.
He's a good speller. All right, while you're there, definitely go and sign up for the newsletter. As part of signing up for the newsletter, you'll get a video that Mike made where he shows you the top 7 snatch mistakes that you're probably making that are keeping you from hitting that next PR and lifting some big weight.
Yeah, look at the seminars, tune into the show, and get ready to become a more awesomer version of
you. We give you the tools you need to succeed.
You become a tool.
All right, guys, Doug Washington here with Barbell Shrug. We have Austin Monsevice. Did I say it right?
What's up, guys? Yeah, that's right.
Close enough.
You've been here for 2 years, and yeah. I'm just now getting your name down.
As of 2 weeks ago at Nationals, Mike still didn't know my name. Been working out here for 2 years. So.
It was
Monsevice.
So for 2 years. Now it's Monsevice. Austin Monsevice is here. Chris Moore, obviously. And then David Gross. Excuse me. I was like, I almost called you David Moore. Do we have a David Moore in our
program? That's my brother's
program?
Name.
Oh, that's your brother's name. I was like, who is that? So we got David Gross, who's one of the coaches here at Faction on
What's
the show.
Up?
You've been on the show one other time that got aired, and then one time that didn't get aired from the infamous pool party episode.
My first time on Barbell Shrug did not get aired. So thankfully,
our cameraman was out of action that afternoon.
That was a bit of a disaster.
Pool.
Yeah,
that was kind of your fault for putting him out of commission.
Oh,
is that right, cameraman?
I think Chris Moore was feeding you the The moonshine.
I don't know.
Peach flavored moonshine, which is deceivingly good, but almost poisonously too alcoholic.
Yeah. We should be having round two on the pool party here in the next couple weeks or
almost that time.
Maybe 2 months.
Nice. Hope so. Yeah, the weather just got nice and it's swimming weather.
Yeah. All right, so today we're going to be discussing gaining muscle mass specifically for smaller CrossFit athletes. Like you used to be before you put on all this muscle mass and now
before
we're humongous.
Huge.
Before you got
as
huge.
As you can see.
Huge.
That's right. So
a
for everyone
approach.
That doesn't know you very well, go ahead and give a little bit of your background and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. I started CrossFit when I was 17. I was a junior in high school, and my mom actually found it and got our whole family into it. And so that's kind of how I found it. And
how old are you now, though?
I'm 20. Yeah, sorry. So 3 years.
3 years.
It was about this time, actually. It was like March. When
now I'm 45.
So
look how great I look.
But for about my first year of it, I didn't really do any strength work. Only did like Metcons conditioning because that's what I was good at.
Right.
So I like to run and like do pull-ups, box jumps,
it's amazing
stuff
how
like
the
that.
Smaller guys like to do the things that they're very good at.
Yeah.
Just like the fat guys don't like to do gymnastics.
Yeah, just squat all the time. So.
Yeah, for 350 pounds, you want to bench press.
You don't want to go for a jaw.
It's like you read my mind.
So probably after about a year I started being a little bit more interested in getting strong. I'd done a few competitions and had done okay, but like it was in the scale division and I wanted to be able to compete RX, but the weights were always too heavy. So started working out a little bit, lifting a little bit, and then now
so in competition you wouldn't necessarily be tired, you just couldn't lift the weight.
Yeah. Like, if it was, you know, I have specific memories of events. Like, there was an event at, actually, Faction Games 2010.
Mm-hmm.
It was, like, a heavy for me then. Stone to shoulder, I think it was, like, 65 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And pull-ups. And I would pass
everyone
up on the pull-ups.
If it's half your body weight, that's a lot to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And then the stone would just, like, crush me. And so wads like that. And then if it would be, like, a 5K run, then I would come in first.
Right.
But if it was, you know, any kind of lifting.
The best example of that.
How'd you do on the obstacle course?
Oh, sorry.
I came in third.
Yeah.
So,
was that the heaviest event for that Faction Games?
It was the stone one.
The stone.
That in the scale division, I don't remember there being any barbell work. There was some kettlebell stuff, but it wasn't very heavy. I did actually. That was the 2010 Faction Games. I did pretty well. I think I finished third in the scale division. But then a few months later, I did a Garage Games competition because I was on like this CrossFit high or whatever. And I was like, oh, I'm so good. I finished third in the scale division. And it was a wad with, it was like 155-pound deadlifts and running. And I did really good at the running, and the deadlifts just absolutely killed me. It was 155 pounds, which
what was your body weight
kill anyone.
What was your body weight at the time? I know you're a little bigger now.
body weight at the time was 140 to 145. Right now.
Yeah, so if you do that, like, you do that 10 or 15 times, yeah. You pick up your body weight or more, that's already pretty fantastic. But some guy who weighs 200 and is doing
yeah,
that
it's just
two or three times more
it,
than
so.
You, there's no way you can compete.
It's just not right. as hard for him.
The best yeah, example exactly. of a sucky wad, if you're a smaller guy, that you it sticks out in my mind from the year before last games where they did the heavy sled push, like the dog sled
yeah.
push.
Watching right. Spieler and some of those guys push
you
it.
See guys, like, get really psyched up, get motivated, like Spieler or somebody, and they just lunge and grab the handles and push everything they got, yeah. and just nothing happens.
It's like they're pushing a tree.
yeah.
It's like
yeah.
you can move all you want. You can be proficient in all these lifts and be really, really conditioned, but if you ain't got a certain amount of ass behind you, you ain't yeah. going to do that.
Yeah.
it's impossible.
So what are you up to now, body weight-wise?
Actually, right now, I'm only like 152, so yeah. that's not like a huge gain, but just as far as like muscle gain and just overall strength, it's gone up.
Yeah.
Well, that's not necessarily
true,
though.
Strength numbers have gone up a
lot. Yeah, strength numbers have gone up a ton.
When you're a smaller guy, if you gain 10 pounds of muscle,
right,
compared to like if I put on 10 pounds,
yeah.
it's much more meaningful for you.
That's
I mean,
true.
10 pounds
yeah.
is much more valuable.
Yeah, so wait, what are your current best lifts? And then we'll move on to David here in a second.
Right now, best snatch is 200 pounds, so like 93 kilos, I think, or 91 kilos.
Mm-hmm.
Clean and jerk. I actually just hit 253 pounds at Nationals last weekend, so that was cool.
So
back squat,
like body weight
345.
A third, snatch, body weight in two-thirds, clean and jerk?
Yeah, roughly.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's huge, man. That's great.
Those are big lifts.
Back
yeah.
squat, yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. Okay, so sorry I cut you off.
Oh, sorry.
What was your back squat?
Back squat, 345. Front squat, 300. Shoulder press, 160. What other
pressing
lifts?
Over body
what
weight.
Do we do?
Yeah,
pretty
over
good.
Pressing
yeah.
over body weights. That's strong. For real. So, all right, Dave, give us a little bit of your background, too.
Yeah, so my background, I'm actually previous military. I did 4 years in the Navy about 4 years ago, about 4.5 years ago. I started CrossFit in San Diego. My buddy was like, we were doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu mm-hmm. and kickboxing. We're taking some classes at an MMA gym, and he's like, hey, you got to check this thing out. This is what all the fighters are doing. And I think, I can't remember what fighter was doing that, but I was like all into him. Chuck yeah. Liddell. Chuck Liddell was doing CrossFit.
Oh,
so
yeah.
At the pit. Yeah. So I was like, I gotta try this. And my first wad was Fran. I was laying on the ground afterwards. I was like, I love this. I'm this is what I want to do. So
that's my first one too. Yeah. How weird.
Throughout my throughout my Navy career, I taught CrossFit on the ship. I was on aircraft carrier. I just fell in love with it. Moved back home and got introduced to you guys, mm-hmm. and I teach the morning classes here at Faction.
So smaller CrossFit athletes and taller, thinner CrossFit athletes kind of are in the same boat where they both could benefit from putting on quite a bit of muscle mass. Like
yes.
that's what holds back a lot of the tall, thin guys, that they're just plain not strong enough. They're not
right.
built to press. They're not built to do Olympic weightlifting in a lot of cases. They've got long limbs, short torso, and they're thin. And so you've been focusing a lot lately on also putting on more muscle mass and getting stronger. And you're actually doing the 6 month weight gain challenge right now too, right?
Yeah, 26 and 26.
26.
It's your guys' program, so I decided to pick it up, and we're in first week now.
We just finished the first week. Yep.
And so far so good. It's a big change. Eating a lot more and high volume lifts. So I think after the first 2 days, the first day was find your five rep max on your back squat. No big deal, right? Five rep max. Then I turned around and saw it was like four sets of five at 90%.
Exactly. Yeah.
Woo,
that's,
man.
I think that first week.
Wrecked.
The golden ratio for doing lots of work and getting much stronger is going up something heavy, then backing off that just a little bit, and then doing a lot of work right in that 80 to 90% zone. That's the best way I can think of to be strong.
Right.
I really like building up to like a five rep max, like you were talking about, just like a daily max. You build up to whatever you can hit for five for that day. Going down to 90% like you're talking about and kind of getting that volume in.
Yeah, it has two things. It's a better warm-up. Like, if you warm up to just that number, one, the percentage might be wrong because you might be over underestimating what you can actually do for 90%.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So,
yeah, people use their max from 2 years
ago. Invariably, the first,
right.
if you do 5x5, the first couple kind of suck. The middle one's great, and then they get kind of bad. But if you work up something kind of heavy and step back, you have that bit of potentiation. You're really good warmed up, so you're starting – and the first set of five feels fantastic. And I think you get a higher quality of work across those sets. Mm-hmm. I think it's the best thing to do. And every super strong weightlifter I can think of, Olympic weightlifter, that's the base of the squat. Whether it's front squat or back squat, go up and hit something heavy than do work at something a little less. So I think it's a brilliant approach.
Right, Mike's been programming like that.
Yeah, I like. I actually like the work sets. The five set, or the four sets of five afterwards. Mm. The first set, like you were saying, the first set feels a little heavy. Second feels better. Third's getting a little faster. Mm. You get a feel for the weight. By the fifth one, a little tired. You're but
toast.
You're still holding
on. People always think you got to head in one direction. Like, I got warm up here, and I start adding weight to the bar, and then I finish up here, and I move on to something else, or I go home. But no, you can work up. You can come back down. You can start again if things don't go your way. You can retool your form and work back up again.
Right.
But you can't be rushed, and you can't reduce your program to some, like, predetermined, strict flow. Like, if it ain't working on the first wave, back off a little bit and go back up. That's sort of built into that approach where you hit something to feel where you're at, then you prescribe off that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think programming like that is really good because it's kind of a good mix between like going off of percentages as well as like doing more like strength by feel, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
A lot of times if you come in, you know you have to hit certain percentages. If they feel heavy or if you have hit them before but they feel worse today, whatever, it kind of gets in your head. But
that's
if you kind of go in with a strength by feel approach where you're going to work up to a heavy set for the day
right.
and then do your percentages off of that, it's a little bit of that variance kind of helps you.
Yeah,
a
that
bit,
way,
I
if you're
think.
Recovered, you get heavier sets than you normally would. And if you're coming in, you hit a five rep max, that's
speaking
20 pounds below what you normally do.
Like,
then all of your work sets are lowered also, and you can
kind
of take it easy when you need to take it easy.
Yeah.
Speaking of the weight gain challenge, we had a few people who nervously posted that, man, I woke up this morning, weighed myself, I weigh 5 pounds less, man, than I weighed last night. What's going on?
Right.
Well, you're a living person. Things change. You slept. You don't always drink the same amount of fluid. You don't always eat the same amount, even though you're, regardless of what you think.
Mm-hmm.
So there's fluctuation. Over the course of 2 months, you know what your actual weight is if you measure it. Same with these percentages.
Right.
Yeah.
If you just go in and say, I maxed out 3 weeks ago. My 1RM is 100 kilos. 90% of that is 90, so I'll do that. But that was 100 kilos was your max then.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a little more. It could be a little less. So if you have this sort of built-in flexibility and you calibrate and tweak and you judge what you're capable of today, like even great weightlifters, maybe I can snatch 150 kilos, but maybe 2 weeks from now I can only manage like 135 or 130. Who knows why? I didn't sleep well. I don't feel good. I'm a little beat up.
Mm-hmm.
So on that day, what percentage should you use? You should go off what you're capable of.
Yeah, for sure.
With the expectation that in a week or so, you're going to feel great again. That's just what happens.
Yeah, there's natural ups and downs.
Yeah.
I like that you brought it up with regard to body weight because we end up giving that entire group, everyone that's in the six-month muscle gain program, we gave them an Excel sheet that they can track their body weight every single day, and they can plot their body weight on a graph relative to a trend line that is set up for 26 pounds in 26 weeks. That way they know on a daily basis if they are above or below where they need to be. They can see that, you know, they put their body weight in today and it was 200 pounds and they needed to be 200.3 today and they're down 0.3. And tomorrow they got to be 200.5. And so tomorrow they know exactly where they need to be. And you get that feedback back every single day. Most people, they only get feedback, you know, every time they weigh themselves, which might only be like once a month in a lot of cases. And
you might hit a high
or you might hit a low on that day and not really know where you're truly at.
It's a good way to see your habits.
Yeah.
It's like if you see two or three of those low points now stacking up, you start going, okay, what am I actually doing wrong?
Yeah.
This is not a fluctuation. This is me maybe losing my focus on diet. Now I'm thinking I'm eating well because I've slipped into some sort of automatic morning and afternoon routines.
Mm.
But it could be that, yeah, one serving turned into almost a serving, and then it turned into like a half serving because you got a little busy. The next thing you know, you're going downhill. The trend line starts shifting downward.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
seeing your habits on paper is pretty useful.
Yeah, I think that graph is very useful because if you click on the second part, yeah, I'm using it now.
Yeah.
For the first week, I fluctuated. Like, I was up three, down two, up two, down
it's
three.
It's like being at the casino.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
But on the second part, if you click on the second portion of the Excel sheet, there's a bullet graph,
yeah.
And it maps points.
Mm-hmm.
And I think over time that you know, if you're doing everything correctly, following your diet and following the program, it's just going to steadily rise.
Yeah, if you're out there right now and you're listening to this and you're trying to either gain weight or lose weight, graphing your weight is absolutely huge. You're going to be up and you're going to be down, but you'll be able to see the trend is going up or going down. You really know where you're at.
Right.
Whenever I have a fight, for example, if I know that I need to drop 12 pounds in 6 weeks, which is a drastic, very, very fast change, I'll plot where I'm at. I'll plot a straight line all the way down to where I need to be in 6 weeks, and then I just kind of follow the line. And I always make weight because I always know exactly if I'm on track or not. There's no, oh, I thought I was on track for 4 weeks, and then the last 2 weeks turns out I'm not on track, and now I need to lose 10 pounds in 2 weeks. And I
mean, you just don't set your dot on day one and then hope for the best? Maybe say a few prayers or two? You don't do that?
Here we go.
Maybe when I was younger I did, and I know a lot of guys still do that. Yeah. But the older I've gotten, the more precise I've been about it.
It's interesting to point out gaining strength can work the same way. If like, okay, I have a goal that in 6 months from now I want to snatch X kilos. Mm-hmm. Well, then you kind of know week to week what it'll take from going from where you are now to getting to that point. So if you know you're within striking distance as you get 2, 3, 1 month out, then you know that the training is working because you're actually measuring. Yeah, the same way with the weight. So this week I may kick ass in a snatch. A couple days in a row I may suck. But add up those time points, and if the general trajectory is going up, you know your training is effective versus people who have a couple bad days and let it discourage them. Take their eye off the ball, and they start asking the wrong kind of questions in their training. Like, oh, shit, what's going on? I got to fix something. So you intervene and change what you're doing, but you know, oblivious to the fact that you were on your way to getting to your goal. Mm-hmm. That's a big danger.
Right. It takes a while.
It does. I mean, this is you're a living creature who needs to accumulate effects over time, and that's not an acute thing. It's a chronic thing that happens over months and years. Not just, right. Oh, I had a shitty workout today, and I'm a pound over on the scale. It means I'm weak and I'm fat.
Yeah, inevitably in any training program, you're going to plateau. You'll make some progress for 2 weeks, and then you'll see it level off. And then that's when you know, okay, it leveled off. I need to make a change now. And so you know to, you know, add another workout drink or an extra
meal,
or
just more
food
thought.
Per meal, or to back off your training because you're overtraining. You got to make some adjustment to kind of break through that plateau that now you can keep going up or start going up again. Excuse me, because you saw that you weren't making progress, whether it's with strength or your body weight, it's not going to be linear.
What about this,
though? You'd like it to be, but it's not going to happen.
What about this? So we always offer recommendations about where you should start maybe with your training. Here's some good guidelines. One thing I always think about is maybe load for 3 weeks and take a week off. Mm-hmm. And then resume loading on the fifth week. Kind of let that be an up and down pattern. But that's just a starting point that works for most people. Mm-hmm. Lots of people maybe could do with 7 weeks, 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. I'm actually playing with a six-week one now. In my garage, rocking single dad style this weekend. You know, you got to play with things. Keep momentum going every game.
Yeah, and that's exactly how Mike has this program programmed.
Yeah, but it could be that some guys 2 to 3 weeks would work. If you plot your training out and you tried to go for six and you saw your performance went down by four, or you wanted to go four and you saw that on week three you started getting tired, and every month cycle you see that, man, there's a recurring theme here. That's your cue that you should maybe try to play with a longer or shorter interval and maybe get more out of your training. So there's all kinds of awesome insights that only you can gather if you are willing to collect the data.
I think you make a great point there, Chris. Yeah, I've been writing workouts for here at Faction in the mornings, and I found that, you know, following the first week, second week, third week, building up 1, 2, 3, and then deload the fourth week works very well. But on your 6 week that you were talking about, do you go up for 6 weeks and then take a week off, or how
I'm actually
long
playing
is your rest?
Now with so on my current cycle, I actually worked with this with Dr. Mike Hartman, who's a friend of mine. If you haven't checked out his ebook Fortis, Dr. Michael Hartman, it's a great book. We play with this idea of doing a block of training for 6 weeks where you go 3 sets of 5, 5 sets of 5. Mm-hmm. And then down to triples, so 3 sets of 3, 5 sets of 3. And then I've been doing 3 singles and then 5 singles. That's my 6 week flow. So by the end, my volume is really down. I can lift really heavy, but I'm so used to lifting heavy that that's not a concern for me. What beats me up is sets of 5. So I get a huge stimulus up front, and I'm almost recovered by the time I'm doing heavy singles. Mm-hmm. So when I used to do an unloading week, my unloading weeks are low volume, but still heavy grinding weights.
Right.
I don't consider weight to be something that tires you out. I consider the volume to be something. You should never be lifting light, I don't think. That's something I came to in recent years. Like, I used to, when I was powerlifting, my unloading weeks were basically sit on my fat ass. Mm-hmm. And don't do, right. But going to the gym and do some stretching and stuff. Now I realize that I really wasted time there, because for me to, you know, in my prime, to do a 500 or 600-pound squat wouldn't have fatigued me. Mm. It would have just maintained crucial, you know, adaptations, nervous system adaptations that I'd worked so hard for. Mm-hmm. But instead of doing it for multiple sets, just doing it 1 or 2 times, I'm still fully recovered.
Yeah, so always keeping it heavy, less reps for your deloading
week.
Yeah, I agree with that. I know when Mike writes our programming here, either for the weightlifting team or more specifically for our CrossFit competition team, we'll go through periods of really high volume. And personally, me, I don't handle high volume particularly well, like for long periods of time. So
high volume of heavy stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I get beat up pretty quickly.
That's so where drugs are handy.
Exactly. Yeah, but you don't have you know. Now, sometimes for recovery week, excuse me, he'll do like one rep max weighted pull up or a one rep max something to give us that heavy stimulus, but at the same time the volume's low. It's not a lot of reps, and so it's not gonna add to your fatigue or anything like that. It helps.
Yeah, especially true of the Olympic lifts. If you're not putting a heavy snatch over your head basically all the time, you're gonna start sucking at it really quick.
Yeah,
you gotta work and grind.
Yeah, that's a lift that you have to practice all the time.
Yeah, don't take a week off from snatching, because that week back is gonna feel like you just totally lost what your train of thought, what you're trying to accomplish.
Even if you're just keeping it in your warm up, you're gonna keep that movement pattern very fresh,
staying
like top of your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned doing weighted pull ups, and that's actually one of the things we're gonna come back and talk about on the second half for smaller guys doing weighted versions of gymnastics movements.
Yeah.
So before we go into the second half and we talk about these tips for gaining muscle specifically for little guys or skinny guys.
Little
skinny guys.
Use the L word, bro.
The L word.
It ain't cool, man.
Oh, that's right. What did you tell me the other day? I could call you racist, but I couldn't call you little.
Yeah.
But you're not racist.
We prefer the term gravitationally challenged.
He dislikes that term so much he'd rather be called a racist. But he's not racist. Just to put those two together.
Yeah.
Before we go into the second half, we're going to make an announcement right now about a contest that we're having here that's going to be going on here for the next 2 weeks or so. So everyone knows Chris's coined term of coffee, tequila, and barbells. We're going to have a video contest where you can submit a video. It's got to be 2 minutes long or less, no longer than 2 minutes, and you got to submit it on the Barbell Shrugged Facebook wall. Any creative way you want to combine coffee, tequila, and barbells.
Do it safely.
Do it safely. We take no responsibility for how you combine those three things. If you decide you want to put coffee and tequila in your workout drink and kill yourself, it's not our fault, so be responsible, however you can creatively combine those three things in a funny video, how we're going to rank who does the best is how many likes you get. So post that video on the Barbell Shrug Facebook wall, and then whoever gets the most likes on their video is going to win a series of prizes. So first place is going to win a gold pack, which is a combination of our three main seminars, which is the Faction Foods Nutrition Course, which now includes Paul Eich's additional seminar. So it's kind of a two-for-one seminar deal with the Faction Foods Nutrition Course. And then they also get Maximum Mobility and Simple Strength. So three seminars if you get first place. We sell that for $367 in the store. So that's a huge value if you can create a funny video.
So let's get a bottle of tequila. We'll all sign it and send it to you or something. We'll do something fun, too. We'll come up with something cool. Or a package of coffee. We'll send it to you with a T-shirt or something. It might be fun to do.
Yeah, like Chris says, stay safe. I'm interested to see how you put all these three items together.
Just pay attention to the fact that you have a powerful stimulant and an alcoholic beverage. Don't combine them in large amounts. Just use some common sense.
Right.
The first thought I had was, what's best in life? Coffee, tequila, barbells. You got that? What else do you need?
You don't even really have to technically mix these things. It could just be...
No, yeah. it could be a joke. It could be a cocktail. I mean, I don't know. You're not limited by... Use your imagination to come up with something that's just amazing.
They just have to make some type of appearance or be referenced in some way in a video.
Yeah.
And
how you do it is really up to you. 2 minutes, right?
Yeah, we want to keep the videos pretty short, so less than 2 minutes. 2 minutes is plenty long to make a video that's punchy and has a little bit of humor in it. So,
yeah. Right. And do they have to go to the Barbell Shrug website and like it from the website?
Yeah, you have to post
it.
Yeah, upload it to YouTube and then post the video on the Barbell Shrug Facebook wall. And then on that post, whoever gets the most likes wins. So don't post it to your Facebook wall. Post it to the Barbell Shrug Facebook wall.
Right.
So and then share it on your wall. Share it on your friend's wall. Tell people to come to our wall and click like. So you got to promote it yourself. The earlier you do this, the more time you're going to have to get likes. So don't wait. The deadline, is April 26th at noon, which is a Friday. So you got a little less than 2 weeks to do this. So don't wait until there's 1 day left and then think you're going to win. Try to do this right now when you hear about this. Make some phone calls, call some friends, brainstorm some ideas, and grab your iPhone and go film a video and get it up there right away. That way you have time to get the most likes.
All right, this is going to be fun.
CTV, I think
we're going to have to do something with this.
Yeah, I think we'll put CTP in the running.
Yeah.
He's got a little bit of an edge, but he should be able to compete. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about three big tips for little guys to gain some muscle mass.
Second place and third place.
Oh, yeah, second place is going to get just the foods nutrition course, Faction Foods Nutrition course, and then third place is going to get a maximum mobility seminar. So three big prizes for everyone who submits the video. So we'll be back here in 2 seconds.
All right.
Cool.
Hey, guys, this is Rich Froning, and you're listening to the Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to fitter.tv.
All right, guys, welcome back. Before we get rolling, I want to mention that Chris has his live webinar event coming up here on April 21st. We decided that we're going to do it at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. We put out a survey, and that was the time that worked best for most people. So if you have any
questions. What day was that? Was that on a Saturday?
That's a Sunday.
Sunday, okay.
That's right. It's a good thing Chris has figured this out. Right.
I was like, oh, shit, man, I got to be working on a Tuesday afternoon at 1.
That's right. Yeah, Sunday at 1 o'clock, you're going to do a quick presentation on some new stuff that wasn't in the original Simple Strength product. You're doing that if you didn't know that.
I was like, all right, dig it.
You look at me confused. Mike was saying you were going to talk about some of the stuff that you spoke on down at the Garage Games.
Oh, yeah. So I'm currently wrapping up. If I can get a few times or two, some sessions to sit down and put the last finishing touches on it. But that little book project I'm working on is coming together. It's going to be cool. But, yeah, I had some musings on making progress and tweaking and dialing in and adjusting as you move through time. So we'll bring a little bit into the discussion. Some of that will probably make it into a second version of Simple Strength as well. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking ahead, you know, planning some good stuff for the people.
Yeah.
And then
part two,
and also
2.0.
I encourage you guys to get involved in this question and answer session, because if you bring up something I didn't think of and it's a really good idea and we have a good exchange about it, I'll put it in the next version. So you can help me make sure this thing is as good as it could possibly be.
Yeah, the more questions and feedback we get, the better the product gets. Yeah. But we can make it exactly what you want.
I mean, I'm incredibly charismatic and handsome and sexy, but I don't know everything. So help me address the things that you want to know about, and I'll tell you.
So how do we get access to that?
So that is just for
Google.
The people who have already bought Simple Strength. So
okay.
Everyone on the Simple Strength list will be getting an email that'll have the link to that webinar event here in the very near future. They'll probably come out here in the next, if this posts on Wednesday, I'll probably send that out like on Friday maybe. So that'll be about a 1 hour event. He'll speak for maybe half the time, and then we'll do a Q&A for the next 30 minutes of that short session. So if you want to be a part of that and you haven't already bought Simple Strength, there's still plenty of time. You can go buy that product and then contribute to the conversation with Chris. We're going to try and do more of these type of live webinar type events. I think that's what we're going to try and move towards. I like the idea of doing live online events.
Yeah.
A lot of value there. And
probably a little
really
less formal.
We'll
have our informal back and forth exchange amongst friends. How about that? Just you, me, and maybe a little tequila. Maybe we'll keep it nice.
All right. So we got that coming up. We got a lot of other stuff coming up. We are editing the Zach Critch weightlifting seminar. Hopefully that'll be available in the shop here in the very near future. A couple weeks down the road, maybe, Chris? that was a very delayed shake. He's still got a lot to go as far as editing that. Me and David put together a bunch of videos that outline how we run our fundamentals course here at Faction. So we're putting together a Faction fundamentals blueprint, where it's basically a completely done for you fundamentals program, where we have videos of exactly how we teach that program. Has all the handouts that you can print up and use for your members. So if you're a CrossFit coach or a gym owner and you want to implement a fundamentals course at your place and you don't want to have to make any of the paperwork, you don't want to have to guess what to say, we have video recordings of us doing the entire 12-session course. So that'll be available here in the pretty near future. And then finally, we're doing another weightlifting seminar with Justin Thacker coming up, where he's coming down to Faction. And unlike the Zach Critch weightlifting seminar that we already filmed, which is kind of like weightlifting for CrossFitters, Justin Thacker's coming down and doing a weightlifting for weightlifters seminar. So we're going to have those weightlifting products both available here in the very near future, one for CrossFitters and one for weightlifters.
A little more advanced content in the latter, I guess.
Yeah, Zach Critch did a great job outlining technique and coaching squatting and the things that you would that you would learn if you came to a CrossFit gym that was good at weightlifting. And Justin Thacker is putting a more of an emphasis on not so much for CrossFitters, but people who want to compete in weightlifting. There's going to be a big programming aspect that we didn't cover in Zach's seminar. So they're both going to have a little bit of a different dynamic. Mm-hmm. So enough for the moment for promoting all of our stuff. We're going to talk about gaining some weight. You mentioned earlier doing heavy body weight movements was one thing that really helped you Because you were already good at gymnastics.
Yeah,
all body weight movements, push-ups,
kipping,
and
kipping
pull-ups.
Kipping ring dips, muscle-ups, all that kind of stuff.
That's your wheelhouse.
Right, very naturally inclined towards that. So.
Handstand push-ups. Yeah. I remember doing a handstand push-up exercise or wad with you one time. I can't remember what it was.
Did he crush you?
Like, he crushed me. Yeah, I was like, that's like the first time I ever worked out with you, you too.
Well, you're heavier and you're all longer, which is not so well for this movement.
Yeah. So I'm on like, I don't know, I can't remember how many we had to do, but I'm on like 10 struggling, and Austin's like over here. No big deal, you know, living on his hands.
Yeah, so adding weight to gymnastics movements and also not kipping with the gymnastics movements is a great way to help add strength. So, you know, eliminating kipping pull-ups, kipping ring dips, kipping handstand push-ups, doing everything strict for a while is a great way to make yourself stronger. And a lot of people kind of forget about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially in Metcons. Mm-hmm. Always trying to do constantly varied functional movements or whatever. And a lot of people will always kip just because that's how you do more work in less time. Right. But it's okay to do strict pull-ups in a Metcon as just one more way to vary your workout, and then it's more kind of biased towards strength, and you're not using
in a way to get away from this
just on that workout.
High rep bias, really, that especially that's present with guys who can easily move themselves lots of reps. I mean, you do what you're inclined to be good at. So if you're 130 pounds, you can do pull-ups for days. You can do pull-ups for days. You're gonna be like, well, I don't really want to do them heavy with weighted because I'm not as awesome at that. But that's what you need to do. Mm-hmm. A big guy's gonna want to do things heavy and slow. Whereas you could probably benefit from doing the opposite. So it's just a natural tendency people fall into.
Mm-hmm. So what are your favorite ways to make gymnastics movements a little bit harder that have worked for you?
First off, weighted pull-ups. Do those anytime I go through a heavy strength cycle, or even just I'll throw them into my normal CrossFit programming. Right now, though, I'm on a pretty heavy strength cycle. So I'm doing weighted pull-ups twice a week. Strict pull-ups once a week. One of those days is weighted, and one of them is just strict for as many reps as I can with no weight. So you kind of get both.
So with the weight, what kind of load do you? What kind of sets and reps do you?
It just kind of varies. If I have a set, if I'm going for maybe a set of five or set of three, then I'll use kettlebells and see how heavy I can go.
You can do singles too, right? You've done singles for heavy pull-ups.
One rep max type.
So probably no more than sets of five, that. Really. The golden rule. Triples, fives, and singles.
I like to use the same rep scheme that we just talked about, where you build up to a five rep max for the day, and then you take off 10%, you do 90% for sets of five.
You can't find anything better than
that.
That's
great programming no matter what you're doing.
So, Austin, what's the heaviest weighted pull-up that you're doing now?
Actually,
you can lie.
200 pounds.
200 pounds.
No, I think a month ago, in a deload cycle that Mike programmed for us, we had to do a one rep max, and I think I got 85 for one.
So how do you
your weight plus 85?
How do you weight that?
85 pounds.
Use kettlebells or
do
you use dumbbells?
Kettlebells. Just because it's easy to loop the chain through the handle.
Dumbbells are kind of wonky, and plates are kind of wonky.
Use plates, pinch it between your knees. Really, kind of whatever you have to use, but. Kettlebells are kind of ideal. So those weighted ring dips I like a lot more than
those tough exercise
bar
man.
Dips, particularly just because you also have the stabilization aspect of it. So I like that.
We just filmed a technique wad on ring dips, and one of the things that we put in there was doing weighted ring dips, but instead of putting the weight on your hips, which kind of instead of tilting you forward, pulls your hips under and pulls you into hyperextension. Mm-hmm. I like to put a chain over my neck because that rolls me forward a little bit more and puts me in a better position.
Yeah,
that's a good tip.
When I'm down,
man.
I'm still leaning forward just a little bit. Mm-hmm. If I have it on my hips, it'll pull me forward and pulls you into that terrible shoulder
forward. I feel like I get pulled forward.
I've never thought about
that. I get pulled forward just with my body weight.
It really is so much
more
comfortable. If you've never tried it before, you got to try it. Put a chain over your neck.
Just with my body weight, that happens on the rings. I can't feel like I can't stay with my hands. I get teeter-tottered back.
Yeah.
But I may point out here, people just assume that, the ring dips are so much harder. And they are. But that doesn't mean just regular old dips are somehow not as good. Like for you, if you could load up even more weight and do just regular dips, that's going to have a huge strength stimulus.
It'll
probably complement your ring dips a lot. So people usually think that if you do some standard gym exercise, it's somehow not as good as the functional, you know, cream of the crop stuff you would do in a CrossFit gym. And that's not true. I mean, we talked about this before the show. We're kind of brainstorming, but just regular old bar dips. Incline presses and bench pressing, and a big one I think most CrossFitters should do a lot more of barbell rows, or the way I like to do them specifically, a paused pin lay style row, mm-hmm. where you're pulling one rep at a time and you really work on your mechanics that also lend themselves to deadlifting and cleaning well. Mm-hmm. Like all these things that are kind of traditional are in many ways traditional for a very good reason. They are staples that have always been around because they work.
So you're talking about pulling the bar off the ground, doing one row, and then putting it back on the ground?
Yeah, pausing. The problem with barbell rows usually is that people invariably add weight, and they start ratcheting up higher, and then before the end of it, they're doing this little pogo thing where they're not really doing a barbell row.
Right.
And that has absolutely no carryover to deadlifting and cleaning. Mm-hmm. But if you set up for a barbell row, just as you are going to do a deadlift or alternatively a clean, they're not the same positions. Mm-hmm. If you don't know that, you need to dig into that a little bit. Then you can practice. Like when I row and I'm going to be practicing my snatch and I can't really clean, but I practice scooping my knees out of the way and keep my back in a steady position as my knees extend, and I pull the bar right up into me. So I kind of practice the first initial movements I would take if I was going to snatch.
So it's kind of like a deadlift bent row combo.
Yeah, but you keep the back over and you row, but you move your knees like you're going to move them on other lifts. You don't practice doing something that has nothing to do with any other exercise. So there's still a little carryover.
All right. So to demo for the camera.
You're picking up off the ground.
Yeah, so I'm moving my knees out of the way of the bar. So I'm not doing this. CTP, I'm not doing this. 300 pounds that I can't actually row with good form. You know?
Right.
And you touch the ground every time.
Paused every rep, re-arch, reset the grip. Yeah, every time.
Wow.
Yeah. Dig that. Yeah. All right, so tip number one basically was a combination of just eliminating momentum from our gymnastic movements, or eliminating the kip slash adding weight to gymnastics movements. So that's kind of like the first category. Whenever you get talking about gaining weight, obviously you talk about strength training, getting enough sleep, and eating enough food. So we tried to niche these little nuggets and pearls. We tried to niche these down a little bit and give some advice that we hadn't really talked about in other shows. So the second thing we were going to bring up that you had done before was waking up in the middle of the night and eating food.
Yeah.
Like
what was the term for it? I love it.
I believe in the SEALs they call them mid rats, for midnight rations.
Yeah, I love that shit.
Mid rats.
That was in the military too. They would serve food 24 hours around the clock. So you know, because you know, I worked radar on the ship, and you would be up for 12 hours at a time.
Yeah.
Whether it be the first 12 hours or the last 12 hours of the day,
mm-hmm.
and mid rats would be starting from midnight to 2 or 3 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Right.
Okay, so yeah, a lot of guys are getting into the intermittent fasting where you're just taking more of your day where you're not eating. This is kind of the opposite. This is taking more of your day where you are eating. You're not taking that 8 or 10 hour chunk of time in the middle of the night where you're not getting any food. You're waking up after 4 or 5 hours. Maybe you have a shake sitting on your dresser. Alarm goes off. You roll over. You barely remember it. You just you crush a shake and you go right back to sleep.
Yeah.
And for guys that have a lot of trouble, you know, just getting enough food in general, or they're just not very hungry, they can't eat big meals, it's just one more opportunity to get some calories in. And you've done that in the past with pretty good success.
Especially, I'm in college right now, so living in a dorm, mini fridge right there in the dorm, super convenient. keep some milk, protein powder, and berries around, or whatever.
Maybe
you want
to make. A
little bit of beer. and a shake. keep it in your mini fridge, and it's right there when you wake up.
It's funny, in that situation, there is no such thing as breakfast anymore. Wow.
Because
you're never breaking fast ever again if you wake up in the middle of the night and eat two or three times.
The fast.
Yeah, there's no such thing as breakfast.
Fast. Yeah, I used to do that when I was in college also, and it worked out great. I didn't have any means to cook in my room,
so
I would powder oatmeal in a coffee grinder with a scoop of protein, and then I would powder flax seeds and put that in there with some cinnamon, and then I would just shake that up with water, and it would be...
There you go.
That's it'd be awesome. A high-calorie meal. It was semi-balanced. There was carbs, fat, protein. I was trying to get bigger, so having a heavy chunk of oats in there, I wasn't really that worried about at the time when I was playing college football when I was 30 pounds bigger. And
you're like 20 years old, so like gluten is like the last fucking thing you're worried about.
Yeah, I mean, there's no gluten in oats unless
you're not on a grains trip at that point in your life. You just want calories.
Not worried about it all at that point. Especially if I was going to football practice and lifting weights and doing 10 sessions a week, I wasn't worried about getting fat. I was just trying to keep my size and my strength throughout the season.
Yeah.
But it worked out very well, and it was really cheap. So if you're a guy that is really struggling to get enough calories, then that's a good opportunity to get some calories in the middle of the night. You ever tried that?
Yeah, I have actually. It's tough to wake up for me.
Yeah.
Not unless I have to really pee and it's kind of hard to get up.
Comes to practice.
I found that after a while, I would just wake up and look at my counter, and it'd just be gone. I wouldn't remember waking up. I wouldn't remember drinking it. I just
sleep eating.
Yeah, I just
it takes 30 seconds.
Yeah, gone. 30 seconds. You're back asleep. You're like, did I drink that last night? I did. I think I drank it.
It's just like when you drive home and before you knew it, you were home. You didn't realize what road you took. It's automatic process of your brain executes the program.
And that's a really scary habit too.
Well, it's not scary because your brain does it intentionally because it's if you thought about everything you had to do during the day, you wouldn't have the bandwidth to be able to manage all the facts and stimuli that come in. So your brain does shift automatically into automated patterns. Mm-hmm. That's why it's a good idea because training can become an automated pattern as well, and eating can become an automated pattern. And that's why we do things like collect the data, because automated patterns sometimes aren't good, because if you don't stay diligent in thinking all the time about what you need, if you just do what you assume you need, you wake up and you realize, oh, I haven't been eating enough protein. I haven't been training as hard as I thought I was. I haven't been sleeping as much as I thought I was. Mm-hmm. So those kind of patterns are bad in time. They're good when you're driving because it keeps you from having to fucking think about what you're doing every time. Right. But it's bad when you have habits that start forming that you need to break.
Yeah, if you're trying to make a change and move forward, then
then you have to change something.
Behavior's gonna change.
Right. Now, Doug, with this shake, how many hours before you wake up or after you go to bed should you shoot for this ideal time for the shake?
I always went for 4 hours. I go to sleep, 4 hours later I would drink my shake.
Right.
Assuming I was trying to get it right around 8 hours, and I was trying to do it right in the middle. And there's a lot of debate whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, or whether interrupting your sleep cycle is more detrimental than the benefit of drinking the calories, and people go back and forth like that. For me, I do feel like it helped me get bigger. I wasn't really sleep deprived at the time, so I could sleep. If I need more sleep, I could just go to sleep, but it was just easier to get those extra calories for me at the time. I haven't done it much anymore because I'm not trying to be as big as possible. I only did it when I was kind of like peaked out as far as like it's really hard for me to get any bigger right now, so I'll add these midnight meals.
If you
haven't plateaued on getting bigger and you're not kind of already – I wouldn't say I was at my genetic potential, but I would say that it was starting to get very tough, and I was looking for one more thing to make me bust through that plateau, like we were talking about earlier, because mm-hmm. I didn't know what else to do at the time, and it worked great.
Mm-hmm. Never stop searching.
Right. Yeah. See, the third thing we were talking about was adding in some of the bodybuilder things that they don't really talk about in the CrossFit community. Like, the CrossFit community is kind of opening up to a lot of other forms of training, and the bodybuilding approaches are the last thing to come in.
They've done strongman, weightlifting, and some powerlifting. Bodybuilding's been a slow go.
Yeah, pieces of it are starting to maybe filter back good in reason. as
CrossFit bodybuilding cert.
The CrossFit bodybuilding cert.
First things first, here's how you pick out your pair of Zubaz. Your pants aren't tight and leopard enough.
So adding in some of the bodybuilder methods can be a good thing. The reason that they do them is to build extra muscle mass. So, doing things like forced reps or negatives, which negatives are kind of already in the body or in the CrossFit world for people that are scaling things like pull-ups, for example. If you do jumping pull-ups for a long time or banded pull-ups, eventually you're going to move on to starting at the top and doing a slow negative. And that's one of those kind of weeder bodybuilding type principles that you could apply to a lot of things, not just to something like a heavy pull-up. You know, bench press a whole lot in CrossFit, but a lot of people in the bodybuilding world, we do it on occasion, but in the bodybuilding world, they do a lot of heavy negatives and things like forced reps, where everyone knows that when you bench press, your buddy's always there to spot
all you buddy,
and
all you.
They'll kind of give you a little bit of a bump, and that can help you get stronger. So if you're doing, back to like the example of pull-ups, if you did a set of three on pull-ups and that was all you could do, it would be okay to have a training partner behind you just to give you a little boost so you could eke out a fourth, and then you could do the negative, and then give you a little tiny boost and you could eke out a fifth.
It's work you wouldn't otherwise be able to do.
Yeah, it's just one more way to add some variation and some new stimulus to your program. You shouldn't be super attached to it, and it's not the end-all be-all training, but it's just one more method to give you some new stimulus for growth.
We were talking negatives before, I think specifically with a squat, where if you're training for weightlifting and performance, probably the best thing you can do is squat, where you're doing fives and singles and triples, but you're getting down pretty quick and you're getting up as fast as possible. And you're doing that because when you do something like a clean, if you train your squat slow all the time and you catch a heavy clean rapidly, you're going to drop it. You're never really going to be able to stand up because you haven't learned how to capitalize on this elastic bounding that happens in the bottom of a heavy snatch or clean. You catch it, there's this big shock, and you should bounce up, ideally. I mean, John talked about that in his lifting on the podcast where, if I catch it right, I'm going to bounce up anyway. I ain't worried about that. I'm getting stronger so I can pull in better position. All right, but if we want to maximize how big we get from the squats, then it would be a very good idea as down sets after the quick stuff or as a separate session or as a separate time of the year when you're just focusing on getting bigger to put this more emphasis on the eccentric part, the lowering part. So instead of going down as fast as you can, you always come up as fast as you can, but you'd go down a little slow and deliberate and maybe pause at the bottom. So extending the amount of time and making that a little harder and maybe doing a few more sets. So if you did five sets of five where you're going down a little slow and you're coming up as fast as possible, that's going to be very, very, very fatiguing. So you're sort of accentuating the eccentric loading.
So
which can be very effective.
Which one is it, Chris? Whenever you do squats, do you want to focus more of eccentric or concentric loading? So when you eccentric meaning going down, concentric fast up.
If you're looking, if your primary goals look like I need to get some muscle mass, then adding focus to the eccentric is going to help you. For performance, it's always going to be getting down with. You never want to go down so fast that you can't keep good form. That's silly. If you bounce so fast that the bar pitches forward and you struggle to keep in position, you don't want to do that. But right. I'd say the faster you can get down and up with keeping good form is probably the better. That's also a way of accentuating the loading because the quicker you go down with a heavy load, the quicker you come up, the more force you experience during that exercise.
Yeah, using the bounce is a skill.
Yeah, you have to practice that. And if you don't, for years and years, I did my powerlifting squats with a low bar, relatively shallow depth, bent over. So for me to transition to a bouncing style is so hard to learn because it's such a unique. It's not even the same exercise. People say, high bar versus low bar. Which one should you be doing? Well, they're not the same exercise. They're totally different.
Right.
So you're going to be doing things where you require a bounce with a vertical posture rapidly, the best example being weightlifting. If you don't train that way, you're going to not get the effect you want. You have to. It's not even like I think it's retarded to even have the conversation. If you want to get better at cleans and snatches, you must squat in a way that looks just like that.
Yeah, exactly.
If you don't give a shit and you want to do a power than me and you just want to be kind of stronger and you kind of play with the Olympic lifts, then do whatever you want as long as you're squatting. Right. But it's not
the
complicated
more specificity,
topic.
The better.
Yeah, you got to be – that's one thing. The older I get, the more I realized you always hear specificity and you never really exclude it because, I got to be – from the day one of, strength and conditioning class, you're taught progression and specificity and dynamic correspondence and all that, which basically is saying if you want to get good – doing something where your joints move a certain way, then you better train under load with the joints moving that same way, right? Mm. But really, the older I get, the more I realize that it's really super, super specific. Like, if you want to get good at weightlifting, weightlift all the fucking time. It's simple, but it's not such a simple idea to grasp when you actually try to do it. Like, if you're doing something that looks even slightly different, it could have absolutely no carryover. Mm-hmm. But the older I get, the more I realize you got to really be sort of dead on. That's why a lot of weightlifters do what? They front squat and back squat, and they snatch and clean and jerk. Because that's what I'm going to do. and to me, I'm going to move that way.
Yeah. So if you're trying to get good at weightlifting specifically, then you should train with the bounce like we're talking about. But if you're specifically trying to put on some muscle mass, then it's okay to slow down, be a little more controlled on the eccentric part of the lift, not bounce out of the bottom. And specifically, we always talk about training movements, but it's okay to also train muscles. You're specifically not bouncing and not using momentum just to make those muscles more tired, more fatigued, and to make them sore.
That's why
so
bench press
grow.
Is perfectly fine. Right. There's nothing like evil or useless about doing a bench press. The bench press, you're laying on your back, and that's not so functional. But you're raising an arm, or you're lowering your arms and raising them under a lot of load. That can make your arms stronger. It has benefits.
Yeah,
one being adding muscle
really
mass to your upper body.
Because people overdo it.
Yeah,
if you overdoing only bench press and you do it three times a week and you do sit-ups and curls and crunches and
you're not
home,
a power lifter.
That's all you do. That's bad. But if it's just one part of your training program, then it's just one more way to get stronger.
Yeah. Don't be silly, everybody. Quit thinking that there's evil, stupid exercise and awesome ones you can never question. You got to be a little bit more savvy than that.
You guys ever done 20-rep squats?
Yeah.
Not in a while, but boy. Yeah.
That's what we call
Widowmakers. They're nasty.
Yeah, they hurt.
We used to do 20-rep back squats, 20-rep front squats, back in high school.
Yeah.
And we would do 4 reps with those. If you're doing 20-rep front squats and someone would be behind you for
20-rep front squats?
20-rep front squats.
Oh, Jesus.
They're back there just to kind of pick your elbows up on, 17, 18, 19,
yeah,
20, and just give you a little boost.
Ridiculous.
They kind of just pop you through that sticking point, and then you control down, like we were talking about. You control down, you don't bounce, and then you try to grind it back up, and they just kind of just bump through that sticking point again. I've never been so brutally sore in my whole life.
I've never been so brutally sore.
It works for getting big. It helps.
Not that I'm so masochistic, but I'm playing with the front squat again after years of just refusing to do it because I fucking hate the front squat. Because there's a rounded power thing. Ex-football player guy who loves to be rounded and bent over and kind of folded a little bit. That's where I'm strong and comfortable. To be upright with a load across the shoulders just sucks. I'm committing to it. I may actually play with that because making something painful and also keeping the load down a little bit so you can actually learn the movement, but also kind of building the pain tolerance might really benefit me in my quest to now officially own up to the front squat and do it the way it's supposed to be done.
If you're brand new to 20 rep squats, you never heard of those before. The original way that they were explained to me was you take what you can do for 10, where you just for a back squat, take your 10 rep max, what you could do 10 reps consecutively without really taking much of a break in between each individual repetition, and you just keep the bar on your back until you get 20. So you might do your first 8 without much of a break, and then you might hold on your back, take a couple deep breaths, do 2 more, hold on your back, do a couple deep breaths, do 2 more, take 5 or 6 breaths. Do a single, 5 or 6 breaths. Do a single, stand there for 10 seconds.
Pray to God for mercy.
Yeah, exactly. And do another one, and you just keep it on your back until you get it done. And they are brutal, brutal, brutal sets where it's that unique balance between heavy and high volume at the same time, and that's perfect for getting really, really big. So yeah, if you never tried 20 rep squats, I encourage you to try it. Maybe go a little light the first time because you are going to be brutally sore, and then a week later, add 5 pounds and do it again. And try that for like 6 weeks. Add 5 pounds, do 20 rep squats. The next week, try to PR by adding 5 pounds. And you just hold on your back and just don't drop it until you're done.
And I would do it, if you're...
Not for time, just...
Yeah, like if you're serious in a CrossFit, maybe you compete a little bit. Do it, I guess, in the winter months, a time where you're not really, far away from the open, far away from the time where you're really working on something specific. Do it in your off season, whatever that happens to be. But yeah, man, if you do that for 6 weeks, you're going to have an effect from that.
You
start off
will.
Being terrible, and by the end of 6 weeks, you're like, this is not so bad. That is a huge shift in your physical being. Like, on week one, this set for 20 destroyed everything about me. Mm. On week six, it wasn't so bad. That is huge, man. That's a big change.
Yeah, we used to do that. Once we got kind of accustomed to that volume, we started trying to match it on 20 rep RDLs. So we'd drop it on the ground. We'd rest 5 or 10 minutes. Then we try to go do a set of 20 RDLs with straps on. That was also effective.
I hate to even
nasty sets though.
I hate to even talk about this because it's stupid. But the old German volume training, whatever but doing 10 sets of 10 reps at a heavy load. Actually, there was a time. I may play with that again now that I'm feeling better in my training.
Yeah.
But the most fit I ever had been was in football practice. We did 10 by 10 in the off season to prepare for like the combine bench press test.
Yeah.
So there was a time when I would do 10 sets of 10 bench press with like 275 on the bar, 275 pounds. So 10 reps, and we would rest like, I would rest like 2 minutes, sometimes like a minute and a half or even a minute. And just do that. And by the time I could do 10 sets of 10 with like 245 or 275, that's when I had the best ever performance on my little rep test on the bench. So I did 225 for 39 reps one time.
Wow.
Yeah, that shit can work, but you got to be very careful because it's such a potent stimulus that you go from, and it helps be a little younger. You go from feeling like $1 million and your body alarms to this and adapts to this to throwing yourself right off the rails. So you got to kind of do it in punchy little 4 week blocks.
Yeah,
or
you can't do that for the long term.
But look, the bottom line though is even if you hear idea like that's stupid, that's something that silly bodybuilders do. Don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. You don't really know until you pick an appropriate time and play with it to see whether it has a place in your training. Because even silly things have a pretty good place in some people's training.
Yeah, all this stuff is really just tools.
Yeah,
and you can use these little tools for your own goals without trying to be a bodybuilder specifically. It's almost as ridiculous as like if my mom said something like, "Oh, well, I don't want to eat a bunch of meat because I don't want to look like a bodybuilder." It's like, well,
he uses
that meat as a tool for one thing, and you're using it as a tool for just general health, and that you have completely different training.
Same thing goes to people who lift stones or training. You're not trying to compete in Atlas Stone meets at strongman events. You're just trying to get better at lifting a stone. So, it's a lot of things you could do in here that people accept already. It can be argued that that's not incredibly functional, but you're doing what will add up into something that makes you overall just better. So even if it's something you do for 4 weeks once a year, that's its place. It's a good thing to do at that time.
So complement exercises?
What? So you mean like exercises? So like the bench press and rowing or
bench
something?
Bench press, rowing, they complement your clean.
Yeah, I mean for me, like for like a Penlay row coupled with like a incline, steep incline bench press with like a jerk grip, those two things as assistance exercises, especially in the off season, to help you do CrossFit things better and Olympic weightlifting better, they will help you for sure.
Right.
You know, even like standing dumbbell presses. Any yeah. kind of little variation, anything that's different at the appropriate time is going to really help you a lot.
Yeah, things like dumbbell presses kind of fall in the category of like globo gym exercises, but they still can make you plenty strong, and it's okay to throw this in your program here and there, yeah. even if they're not going to be in a CrossFit competition.
If you think dumbbells are stupid,
one more way to get strong.
And you're the guy who does a ton of kettlebells and never thinks they're stupid, I question, like, what the hell are you talking about? They're chunks of weight that you swing and lift. What's the difference?
You've been indoctrinated.
Yeah, break out of your ruts a little bit, man. Question it. You want to exercise clean two heavy dumbbells and do a set of 10 pressing overhead. That's going to destroy you if you're not used to it. That's hard as hell.
Yeah, or dumbbell and kettlebell thrusters.
Oh, God.
That's another one.
Kettlebell
nasty.
Thrusters.
I did them a couple months ago where I did just one arm dumbbell thrusters. I'm like trying to keep myself in line. It's very useful.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to wrap it up right there. So the top three tips that we just talked about, adding weight and or minimizing momentum for your gymnastics movements. Number two, what was number two?
Mid-rats.
That's
mid-rats.
Right, mid-rats.
Yeah.
Eat,
I love
try
that
eating
term.
In the middle of the night. That's all that being said is if you are already eating really good during the day, this is one thing you can add on. If you eat like shit all day long, this is not something you need to worry about. This is a thing to do when you're already doing
tweak,
all the other things
a,
right. Almost yeah. like a supplement, really. This is a supplemental meal, we'll say. And then number three, what was it?
Oh, not ignoring some of these bodybuilding tools, like focusing on the overloads, doing accentuated eccentric loading, playing with some things like bar dips or weighted dips and incline pressing and stuff like that. Yeah, so opening up the ideas for some of these specialized tools.
Yeah, some negatives and forced reps or even some of the
play with it,
globo
man.
Gym
see
type,
what happens.
Type exercises like incline dumbbell press and what have you. So three great tips. Let's go around the room real quick. If anyone has anything to plug, we'll let you go first while these guys think of something to plug if they have anything to plug.
Yeah, I guess now keep your eyes peeled for that email invite to the Strength Simple Strength Seminar Q&A live event. That's going to be pretty fun. And yeah, just go to the blog, thechrismoreblog.com. I post some stuff just about every day. You know, join the conversation.
David, you got anything? You live in Memphis, come train with David. He's the morning coach here at Faction.
Yeah.
Get your ass up at 4 a.m. to come in and train.
Across
to
Memphis, we start at
dear Lord.
5 a.m., 5 a.m., 6 a.m., 9:30.
And there's
what,
7 o'clock
is your bedtime like
2 classes?
Hours from now?
Yeah, actually, it is.
David goes to bed pretty early since he's here at 5 o'clock every morning. What time you got to get up every day?
I go to sleep at 6:30.
Oh, really?
Or 7. Seven on a late day. And wake up at 3
Go to sleep
o'clock.
Or like get in bed? Yeah, like you're well, asleep by 7?
Yes.
Wow.
Then I get up at 3 o'clock. Wow. And that's morning routine, you know.
Take a while to get used to.
That's very early by any standard.
It is. Right. Austin, you got anything?
I don't think so. I think I'm good.
We got to get you a blog or something, man.
Yeah, something.
You need somewhere that you can rant your thoughts and feelings.
Austin
Talk
M.
Show.
AustinM.com.
What is it?
AustinM.com.
Because no one's going to know the last name. So.
That's right. Nobody can pronounce it anyway.
Keep it to a letter.
All right, so don't forget about the contest that we have coming up. Coffee, tequila, barbells. Put them in a video. Post it on the Facebook wall. Do it soon so you can get the most likes possible and you can win those seminars. Also, always go to the newsletter. Sign up for that. That way we can keep you up to date with all the episodes and all the videos that we post each week. Lately, I've been sending out week in review emails that has, you know, 8 or 9 of the videos that we post every single week. That way you can stay up to date on everything. So thanks for coming out, guys. Appreciate being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Sweet. Until next time.